Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
It's always interesting to me to see how the big holidays affect people, especially holidays like today that were originally based on religious stories, but end up later on getting mixed together with lots of other things like family get-togethers and commercial interests like the Hallmark card industry and chocolate and candy and all that stuff. And all sorts of memories from our childhood are usually tied up with these kinds of holidays. I remember when I was growing up, we were a normal Catholic family, if there is such a thing, going to church every Sunday and observing all the regular church holidays. They were called Holy Days of Obligation at the time. Some of you remember that stuff. And we used to go to church Easter Sunday morning, of course, to Catholic Mass, but I really didn't mind Easter all that much because I had to go to church every Sunday anyway, and it was just another Sunday. Now, Christmas, when it came on a weekday, you had to go to church an extra time. I didn't like that so much, so Easter was better. But anyway, just like Christmas, we'd go all dressed up in our best clothes. Sometimes we went to Easter sunrise service, which was at 6 o'clock in the local park, which I didn't like very much because I never liked getting up in the dark. But my most vivid memories of Easter, as silly as this may sound, involved looking for my Easter basket. Okay? You see, Easter baskets were a big tradition in my family. We didn't have an Easter egg hunt. Instead, we each had our own basket. When a child was born, there were five of us spread out quite a ways in years, and everybody would get their own special basket, and that was their basket forever and ever. I still got mine somewhere. I think my mom's got it down in Florida. And when we woke up Easter morning, the bag was filled with all sorts of goodies and stuff like that, and it was hidden somewhere inside the house. Anybody else do that? Was that just a Midwest thing or, you know, kind of whatever it was, okay? Maybe it was just a Gagne thing. I don't know what it was. Anyway, originally, now my parents would hide all of the baskets since they were playing the part of the Easter Bunny, like they played Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy and all that stuff. And they used to hide them places like behind the couch or under the bed, real easy places for little kids to find. But when the kids started getting older, I was number two of five, and we didn't believe in the Easter Bunny, but we still had the little ones around who did. They turned the job over to us. So it turned into kind of a sibling competition. Hiding a basket became an art. The only rule was it had to be hidden in the house, and it wasn't a very large house. So we had to get very creative. I remember one year I hid my brother's, my next oldest brother, one 4 years younger than me, I hid his basket inside a convertible sofa. I opened it, pulled out stuffing, bent the mattress back, put it back together, put it right in the middle of the living room. He never found it. I eventually had to tell him where it was. Another year, I hid my sister's basket in the kitchen garbage can. Okay, now, I wrapped it in plastic, totally, and I put it inside an old empty dog food bag and put it under about 10 inches of coffee grounds and old food, all sorts of other garbage and everything. And believe it or not, she found it. Now, she knew I had a twisted mind, you know. But she also had to take another bath before she went to church, which is funny. Then there was a time my brother, the one who's I hid in the sofa, okay, he hid my basket in a ceiling light in the bedroom, you know, those kind of disc lights that would screw in up there. It was a big one because it was a big bedroom, huge bedroom in the house. And I went into the bedroom, I was looking over, and I turned on the bedroom light, and about 10 minutes later, we looked up, and there's melted chocolate and that green stuff all inside this big dish and everything. It was a mess. It was a mess. Anyway, after a few years of that, I started wondering how all this Easter stuff was related to the resurrection of Jesus, which is what all the nuns at my Catholic school said was the real meaning of the holiday. I mean, who knew, okay? Anyway, but what they didn't tell me, or probably what they didn't know, was that there was actually another, even another meaning of the Easter holiday that came before the one they were telling me about. So I want to talk about that and share that with you a little bit because I like history of these ideas. You see, every religion, every major world religion has always had some sort of, and still does, a celebration of springtime, like Angela was talking about, because the appearance of spring seems to be almost magical. Okay, there's really no other word for it. Every year, much of the earth, not the equator where it's always the same, but much of the earth seems to be cold and dead all through the winter. But in a matter of just a few days or just a couple of weeks, the weather starts to turn warm and the leaves start coming out and everything starts to turn green. All the flowers and the leaves seem to come out of nowhere. It is a rebirth. It's a renewal of life. And no matter what your religious persuasion, it's really impressive. We all know what it feels like. Spring fever was what you were feeling back on April 1st, a few days ago, okay? Now, that's today. But for primitive people, the feeling was even more pronounced when spring showed up because surviving the winter wasn't always easy. It was hard to keep a fire going, to stay warm, or to store up enough food for the winter. So when crops and animals came back and came out in the spring and warm weather was there instead of ice and snow, that was usually the cause for some pretty wild celebrations. Now, how does this relate to the Easter story? I'm glad you asked. Here it is. About 100 years after the teacher Jesus passed from the scene, his followers, who were actually the first Christian missionaries, they didn't call themselves that, they called themselves Jews with a different set of beliefs, okay, the disciples who carried these teachings outside of the Middle East and Palestine, they began to run into, as they got further and further away from the Middle East, quite a few other religions, mostly pagan. And pagan simply means somebody who believes something different than I believe. That's kind of what pagan is, you know, whatever. And who were celebrating their springtime festivals at the end of winter. Meanwhile, while they were going out and meeting all these people, these self-proclaimed Christians were looking for a time or a date to celebrate the miracle of their faith, which was the resurrection of Jesus. Now, they didn't know the actual date that it happened. This was 100 years later. Nobody had anything written down, okay? They just needed to get something on the calendar so they could celebrate this because everybody was celebrating at different times. So these new kids on the block, the Christians, found it easier and a lot less confrontational to combine their forbidden celebration, forbidden by the local priests or whatever religion was, to combine it with the local springtime celebrations so that they wouldn't stand out. And one of the older and more popular, not to mention wilder, celebrations in Central Europe, in the area that was Germany and France, called Saxony, was the celebration of the festival of the Saxon goddess, fertility goddess, Esther. Esther. And the word Esther in the Saxon language means spring. So when you're saying Happy Easter, Easter means spring in the original language, okay? So that's the holiday that they ended up using to disguise their new holy day. In fact, they borrowed not only the holiday, they borrowed the name, what we call Easter Sunday. Okay, that's a history some of you are familiar, some of you may not be. Now, just in case you were curious, that's the reason we still have all these different Easter symbols that don't seem directly related to the formal meaning of Easter. For example, the rabbit was the animal symbol of the goddess Easter, which is where we got what? The Easter Bunny. Okay, that's where the Easter Bunny came from. And how about coloring Easter eggs? Anybody do that this year? Some of you with kids may have done it, a few, okay. That also came out of the springtime fertility celebrations because an egg is a universal symbol of fertility, okay? In other words, an egg is a form, a closed form, where life forms invisibly inside, and they couldn't see what was going on inside. Life changes from an idea into substance. It's something created by two different ideals, the male and the female, the masculine and the feminine, into a brand new form that has characteristics of those, but also characteristics all its own. It's a very spiritual idea, if you think about it. You see, the life that is growing inside of an egg, before it can survive outside, has to prove that it is stronger than the form, stronger than the shell that surrounds it. And that's harder than it looks. Because any engineer will tell you that an eggshell is not nearly as fragile as we think it is, okay? It is not easy for a little tiny creature that has just grown to a certain level to break out of that egg. But here's the key. The act of breaking out of this shell is actually necessary to its survival. In fact, if you saw a little crack in an egg and you opened it and you helped the baby bird out of the egg so it didn't have to break out, it would probably die because it needs to struggle to force the body to start to move and grow and to get the power of life moving enough in its body so that it can exist in the outside world. It's the same with a butterfly coming out of a cocoon. Now, if you think about it, this is a great analogy for us. Because whenever we feel like we are stuck inside the same old shell, whether it's a job or a relationship or a financial situation, only we can decide when the shell has become too tight because we've grown too much that we now need to get out so that we can grow. All right? So we are never trapped by the shell. We are trapped by our reluctance or our fear that prevents us from breaking out of it. You see the analogy here with it? All right. What we have to realize is that the very act of breaking out of something or breaking through something, which we sometimes have to do, that appears to be holding us in, the act of doing that strengthens us, not just physically, but also mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. But here's something else we have to realize. Before we get to that point, there is usually a certain amount of preparation required before we're ready to make our move, before we can actually undertake our metamorphosis, our change. Now, that might include physical strengthening. It might include mental learning. It might include spiritual centering, okay? But there is a process of growth that we have got to go through once we know at some deep level of awareness that we're going to have to make some sacrifices before we can move to the next level. And that is where the need to surrender comes in. Because surrender, in the spiritual context, does not mean giving up. It means opening up. It's a totally different meaning. It doesn't mean we're weak. It actually makes us stronger. Now, that's where the whole idea of Lent comes in, the 40 days before Easter. It's not about self-deprivation. It is about preparation. It's about preparation. And taking time for prayer and preparation was not exclusively a Christian or even a Jewish idea. Most of what we call pagan celebrations going back thousands of years are always preceded by periods of fasting, prayer, or even sacrifice. So that's what spiritual practice of any kind is meant to be. It is a period of preparation which, if we do it right, and by right I mean if we do it authentically, mindfully, and faithfully, some very spiritual words, it is a period of preparation that makes a successful outcome inevitable. And by a successful outcome, I simply mean it gives us the opportunity to live our life in a more joyful, loving, healthy, prosperous way. In this teaching, we believe that this thing that we call life should be a constant process of moving from where we are in consciousness to a better or more fulfilling state of consciousness. That's what life should be. So life should be a constant process of raising our consciousness so that we can see the life that we're already living from a higher point of view. That's what we mean by a resurrection or a rebirth. That's what the Easter story symbolizes. You see, the whole Easter story that many of us grew up with, I know some of you grew up in a Jewish tradition, some Muslim, whatever, but in the Christian tradition, the whole story from the Last Supper through the crucifixion and the stone rolling back and he's not there and the tomb being empty and then the teacher showing up again, it's a glorious story. It is really a beautiful story. Hollywood has made some great movies about it, okay? But it's not a story. It is not a story about a half God, half man who lived and died and lived again 2,000 years ago that we are supposed to worship. That's not the story. The story is a myth, which is not a criticism, all right? Because a myth is a sacred story meant to deliver a powerful spiritual message that if we can understand it, will help us to live a better and more meaningful life. In other words, it is a story about us, not just us in this room or this city, us, everyone, everywhere, about what Dr. Holmes calls our Christ consciousness. And it's not a story about a specific person. It's a story about our own awakening, or should I say our reawakening to our true divine nature. Now, the central character of this story, let's talk about that for a minute. A rabbi, a teacher, whose name was Yeshua ben Yosef. Okay, Joshua, son of Joseph. It wasn't Jesus Christ. That came a long time later, okay? He is someone who is both human and divine, who prepares his entire life for his own growth and transformation. And he teaches other people how to do the same. That's what he went out to do. And at the end, he becomes so aware of his spiritual connection with life that he overcomes the greatest obstacle of all, which is death. He overcomes death. But a lot of people don't recognize that this story applies directly to all of us. To all of us, no matter what our religion happens to be, because we are all also both human and divine. This story tells us that we too should be learning and practicing our own spiritual growth and transformation all the time. Why? Because if we do, there will be nothing in life that we cannot overcome. Not illness, not poverty, not fear, not even death. Because that which we truly are can never die. Now, this is not a new idea. Every great spiritual teacher who ever lived has told us this, going back from Moses, the Buddha, up through Jesus, all the way up through people like Mother Teresa, who Angela read from, Dr. King, any of these great spiritual teachers. They have all told us that we are both visible body and invisible spirit. We live in a physical world, excuse me, but we also exist simultaneously in that place they call the kingdom of heaven. Excuse me, the place that the teacher Jesus told us is at hand. So the idea of the resurrection, which is a central event in the Easter story, symbolizes the spiritual power that we all have to overcome all the physical limitations around us that appear to be so real. All right. I mean, think about it. If we truly believed that there was nothing that we could not overcome, that there's nothing in the world that could harm us or hold us back, if we truly believed that, how would that affect the way we think and act every single day? If we knew that any time we wanted, we could simply step forward through limitation and fear and despair, however they were showing up in our life, into light and joy and infinite possibility, what kind of life would most of us choose to create? Think about it, okay? Most of us, I would say, would probably choose to live a bit differently than we're living now. Don't you think? I certainly think so. So this powerful story that has been manipulated and misrepresented for centuries is actually telling us that we need to focus our attention on something bigger than our daily complaints and inconveniences. It's telling us that we need to raise our vision, what I once heard described as the ascension of our attention. Isn't that a great phrase? The ascension of our attention. Somebody went, ooh, I see people writing that down. I love it. It's telling us that we need to examine what it is that's actually attracting our attention in life. Is it the condition, the appearance, the effect around us, or is it the deeper truth behind the condition? When we look at ourselves, do we see sickness or lack of money? Do we see fear? Are we sick, poor, or afraid? Or do we focus on health and prosperity and love as the real power in life, ready, whenever we are, to reassert itself in our life? In the final part of the Easter story, there is no death. There is no ending. It's just a transition of awareness from despair over a false appearance, which was a death, to joy when the truth shows up later as the real answer. It's not a story about an immortal body, it's a story about an immortal spirit, a spirit of life that is in every single one of us in this world, and any world that came before this life, and any world we're going to be in afterwards. The story is about the self that we really are, that is greater than our physical body or our physical experience. It's a story that tells us that whenever we feel like we are dying, we can always be reborn. We can always be reborn. You see, one of the most unique things about us as spiritual beings having a human experience, we use that phrase a lot, is that our soul, our spiritual essence, is always looking for more of that which is like itself, of that which is like itself. That inner desire we all have to enjoy and to express life is not just a desire for more stuff, like more money, more success, more recognition, though some people think so. If you think about it, what we are all craving, every single one of us, on the spiritual level, is simply to know that we are growing in wisdom and awareness and understanding. I mean, that's really it. That is the only thing that our soul hungers for. We all want to be in balance. We all want to be sure that we're expressing life in a way that's meaningful to us and to the people around us. We all want to know that we are giving our energy and our attention to the important things and that we're living life in a way that contributes to life everywhere. But sometimes we get distracted, don't we? Sure we do. We get distracted by the drama of the people and the world and the things and the news all around us. I mean, no sane person wants to live in fear, feeling separated from other people, separated from God, even separated from their higher self. Nobody wants that. Nobody hungers for that. There's something inside of us that knows that we are the individual expression of one power, once again, like we sang about, of a power that's never afraid and a power that knows no limitation, a power that loves unconditionally and expresses life abundantly. That is the gift that we were all born with, and that gift will never die, which is why on the spiritual level, neither will we. So this is what the Easter story tells us, and it's not a story that just happened once a long time ago. It happens over and over and over again, day after day after day. It happens when we choose to live a new life by dying to the old. It happens when we voluntarily release old, worn-out ideas that have been holding us back and allow ourselves to move forward, knowing that all the brilliant ideas that we're going to need, the people, the opportunities, the resources, all of them are going to be right where we need, right where we are, when we need them. We don't have to go looking for our good because nobody's hiding it except us. And nobody's limiting it except us. Dr. Holmes writes this in The Science of Mind. He says, "Our spiritual power is always greater than any use we have made of it." Straight and to the point. Our spiritual power is always greater than any use we have made of it. If nothing else, that means that we've all got plenty of time and room to grow, and not even death can stop us. So, if someone is hiding your metaphysical Easter basket, okay, somewhere where you can't find it, stop looking for it out there. Stop looking for it in the garbage, okay, even though I may have put it there, all right, okay? Start looking in here because that's where you're going to find it. And when you do, you're going to see that it's full of something even better than chocolate bunnies and jelly beans and marshmallow eggs, as good as those things are. You will find that it is full of the gift of life. You'll find that it's full of health and happiness and prosperity and more love than you can ever imagine. And you can never use it up. In fact, the more we use, which is better than candy, the more we use, the more we're going to have. And as far as I'm concerned, that's something that's worth finding. Anyway, on behalf of David and I, the practitioners, the board, and ministers of this center, I hope everyone has a wonderful springtime, Easter, whatever you want to call it, week and weekend. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. All right. Thank you. Okay. Let's take a... All right, let's take a moment. A lot of stuff, a lot of information. Take the ideas that resonated with you. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others for later. And let's know this. I know that I am more than I appear. I know that life is more than what appears. I know that the more and more that exists above and beyond everything I see, taste, touch, feel, smell is God. It is spirit. It is the infinite creative mind constantly expressing life in greater ways, and it is in me. I know that I am able to face any challenge, to confront any issue that I have created in my life, and to overcome it by simply knowing something better, by knowing that joy is stronger than anger, by knowing that peace is stronger than war, by knowing that life is stronger than death. This is what I know, and this is what I apply to my life. So as I know this, I deal with the world in a different way. I move into the world feeling my center, feeling the peace and the calm and the strength that is at the core of my being. And I bring the best of what I am and the best of what God is to every situation in which I'm involved. And as I do this, not only do I transform the situation I'm in or the place that I am at, I attract other people, I help others to grow, I allow others to help me to grow, and all of us growing together begin to express the oneness that we are. This is the truth. I am grateful for this awareness. I'm grateful for the opportunities that life gives me every moment of every day. I'm grateful for being here in this moment of rebirth in this beautiful spring season. This is my truth. I accept it, and I release it into consciousness, knowing that it will do its good and perfect work, multiplied abundantly from this moment on, and so it is.